is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You're listening to Locked On Pistons, your daily Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Duncan Smith. You can follow me on Twitter at DuncanSmithNBA, and you can read my work on PistonPowered.com. You can follow that account at PistonPowered. Today we're going to go back to the Reddit mailbag, and we're going to answer some of your questions. Grateful for the responses that I've been getting when I go to Reddit. You guys have been most helpful for filling out content at this kind of dry stage of the NBA year. So I'm grateful, and I hope that I've been able to inform and educate on some topics that you guys might be wondering about. So hopefully this has been a beneficial two-way street for you guys. I know that I've been getting a lot out of it. So again, thank you. We're going to get right to the questions. We're going to start with ACAT114, who asks, has Andre Drummond reached his peak? I think he has some areas in which he could improve. I think that the realignment of the offensive hierarchy that the Pistons seemed to go through over the second half of the season last year might actually benefit him. He's finding himself with fewer touches. His usage dropped over the second half of the season, maybe the last third of the season or so. And that usage dropped in exchange for Marcus Morris and Tobias Harris's usage is going up. So lower usage for Drummond most of the time is going to mean fewer post-ups. He's basically the worst regular post-up guy on the roster, whereas Tobias Harris's post-game is pretty sound. He's definitely the most productive Piston from the post. So how Drummond can reach his peak, I think, is going to be focusing more on the things that he's good at and less on the things that he's not good at. Obviously, we know that the free throws, if he could ever figure the free throws out, would do absolute wonders. We know that if Drummond's free throws can be brought more into a reasonable line, that he would become a dominant big man in a lot of respects. In spite of the free throws being bad, I think that he would be very well served in getting deeper post position on his post-ups. He's extremely efficient when he gets inside 5 feet. It's just when he's like throwing up these off-balance, fading away 9-foot hook shots that he's utterly dreadful. If he can get that deep position, give him all the post-ups he wants, because there are not many big men that can stop him once he gets the ball down low. But that's what he needs to be doing offensively. He doesn't need these finesse 9-foot post-up moves. He needs to be a brute in the paint. And I think that he shies away from that because he dreads the free throws so much. So if he can even just accept the fact that he's going to get free throws and they're going to suck, if he can just get in position to take those shots, that's going to take him a long way. I think that the way that the Pistons use him is going to dictate significantly what his peak actually looks like. And I think that this season is going to be fairly informative on that front. Because again, I think that Stan Van Gundy made some reassessing over the later stages of the season last year. And I think that we're probably going to see a somewhat different methodology of his usage going into 2017-18. Jimor9391 asks, what would a reasonable expectation for return on Drummond in a trade be? That's an interesting question because, like, there's no doubt that he's a sought-after commodity in the NBA. I think that his value right now might be lower than it would be, say, around the turn of the year, if he's producing and if he's playing some of the best ball that he has played, which I think is definitely in the realm of possibility. You know, at beginning of January, end of December, maybe there is a more robust trade market for him. Very often, I kind of hesitate to answer this question because I think that the Pistons, once they figure out the best way of using him, I think that that's the best way forward for the Pistons. I don't think that they should be trying to package him out or trade him for a point guard and a young big man or something like that. I think that the Pistons are better served keeping him right where he's at and remodeling their offense in a way that doesn't expose his failings and feature his weaknesses nearly as often as the current offense does. I think that that's the best way forward for the Pistons. Climaximus has a question. He asks, "We've seen all the draft we've seen all the draftee workout sheets the Pistons have made public. Many of the hopefuls on there are projected late first and second rounds. With George Hill possibly exiting Utah with too high of salary demands, model a trade scenario where we send Reggie Jackson there for their 25th pick that makes the salary and logic work." That's a pretty interesting scenario, because I think that the Utah Jazz might be a team that can use Reggie Jackson effectively. He plays at a slow pace, and the Jazz play at perhaps the slowest pace in the NBA. I have to double-check the numbers, but the Utah Jazz are a slow-paced team at all times. They don't run, and that suits Reggie Jackson just fine. For a trade like this to work, the Utah Jazz are actually a team that has a lot of cap space and thus a lot of flexibility to be able to take on a salary like Jackson's $15 million that he'll be due this coming season. It's something that I looked at as far as a way that the Pistons could actually cut a fairly hefty amount of salary going into the 2018-19 offseason, so next summer, would be if they were to trade Reggie Jackson for Joe Johnson and that 25th pick. Johnson has $11 million on the books for this coming season, which means that if the Pistons traded Jackson and then did not re-sign Joe Johnson, then they would have $25 million coming off the books for the 2018-19 offseason. That would give them plenty of space to figure out a different approach. It might actually be a decent tank move, although I think Joe Johnson might have some spring left in his step. It doesn't even have to be a tanking move in this situation. The Pistons would have to figure something out at point guard. Maybe they could throw in Raul Neto or Dante Exum. They'd probably have to send a little something back that the Pistons might not want to part with, but those are some young, defensively stout point guards that could possibly be plugged into, the spot of backing up Ish Smith, which, you know, Ish is not exactly a top-rung starting point guard in the NBA, but, you know, when we're dealing like just with a two-team trade here like this, that might be a situation that the Pistons would want to look at. They'd get a little bit younger. They would be able to chop a huge portion of salary off the books going into next summer. So thank you for that question, Climaximus. MTommy2597 asks, "Who would be some feasible acquisitions through trade and or free agent signing? I know we're capped out, but it feels like we could trade some depth for some talent. We've got so many forwards and not enough minutes." The cap situation is a problem. It doesn't give them a whole lot of flexibility either for trades or for free agent signings. I'd say that the most likely free agent signings that the Pistons might be looking at right now would be a guy like Anthony Tolliver, a good locker room guy, good shooter. He is a forward, which, you know, he adds to the logjam, but he might also make somebody like John Luehr expendable. Say you sign Tolliver for like the mini mid-level exception in the $4-4.25 million range, then ship John Luehr out. His $10 million contract comes off the books, and the Pistons have an extra $6 million to play with. I think that something like that might benefit them, both from a talent and a salary point of view. Another one is a guy that's been rumored for the Pistons to have interest in, and that's CJ Miles. He's another shooter, and Lord knows the Pistons need that more than pretty much anything, actually. You might be surprised to hear that, but the Pistons' shooting woes were more or less the final nail in the coffin over the course of the season. They ended up with basically, across the board, the worst shooting numbers in the NBA, or at least bottom three in pretty much every category. So if they were to get a guy like CJ Miles, again, he might be another mini mid-level guy, and a guy like Anthony Tolliver. That would both add flexibility in the salary cap, if they were able to move on from John Luehr, and it would add shooting. So I'd say that that's probably the best moves going forward for the Pistons Burt's Balls, B-U-R-T-S underscore B-A-L-L-S, asks, is re-signing KCP our best move this offseason? Who is the best player we can hope for in the draft? Yeah, re-signing KCP is a must right now. I think that there might be some merit to the Pistons waiting and seeing if, in fact, the Brooklyn Nets are going to max him. If the Pistons are willing to pay up, they might as well see what the market dictates. Who the best player the Pistons can hope for in the draft? I think maybe a guy like Zach Collins or Donovan Mitchell. I think both of those guys are expected to go higher, but if one of those was to drop, that'd be great. Luke Kennard is also very enticing. I think any of those guys would be just fine, and they would fit needs. Don't Panic 42 asks, how is Stan Van Gundy going to dig himself out of the hole he's gotten himself in? This team is at best a 4 seed paying the luxury tax. Van Gundy is stubborn, a bad drafter, and hands out free agent money to guys that immediately take a step back when they get here. How can he fix this? Well, it's an interesting question because going into this past offseason, coming out of this past offseason, going into the regular season, I think it was fairly widely regarded that Van Gundy had done a pretty good job with very little in the way of assets when he came to the Pistons. The basket was fairly empty when he signed on. I think that Stan Van Gundy, the coach, has probably done a worse job than Stan Van Gundy, the executive, thus far. A team that's been commonly residing in the lottery over the last decade. You know, they're a cold weather team, small market in the grand scheme of things, is going to have to overpay to get guys. A team like the Cavs, for example, if they had cap space, could probably have gotten John Lure for less money. But he filled, at least on paper, a need that the Pistons had. Like after Kevin Love picked the Pistons apart at will in the playoffs last season, the Pistons needed to get a guy that could stick with a player like Kevin Love, and who could also shoot threes. And John Lure had a 38% three-point shooting rate when he signed that contract. He completely fell right off the face of the earth in the second half of the season, and he was never good from three-point range. That's a problem, whether that has anything to do with coaching, whether that's just John Lure. I think that actually there's a mixture of both. I think that putting him in the starting rotation put too much on his shoulders, and I think that playing against superior opponents exposed him, and it damaged his confidence to the point where he was one of the lesser rotational Pistons by the end of the season, and pretty dreadful when he was putting the ball up from like outside the paint. That's not Van Gundy the executive's fault. The part about him being a bad drafter, we've got a really small sample size to deal with here. I think people forget that his first season, thanks to the Ben Gordon trade, the Pistons did not have a first-round draft pick. Spencer Dinwiddie was a early second-round draft pick. You know, it's possible that the Pistons did all the development work and then just gave up basically a couple months too soon on Dinwiddie when they moved him out of town. So, you know, you've got Dinwiddie, who is not necessarily an example of a bad draft pick. You've got Stanley Johnson, who may or may not end up being a good NBA player, but I think he just turned 21, and teams were going to pick him at 8, 9, or 10. Like, he wasn't going to get much deeper into the draft. It wasn't a reach to grab Stanley Johnson at 8. Van Gundy gets a bad rap because the results haven't been there, but the process has been fine. And I think that that's what people forget after a season where everything went wrong. The important thing to remember about this season is that everything went wrong. You know, like, the steps to make this a 4 seed were basically taken. A 4 or 5 seed team that could compete for 50 wins. Those steps were taken, and you know, things didn't work out, but sometimes things just don't work out. Sometimes the shots don't fall. Sometimes your point guard gets hurt and never gets his form back. It seems overly simplistic to give Stan Van Gundy a clear bill here. I really do think that Van Gundy, the executive, is the least to blame of the various Van Gundy hats we have in the situation here. And I think that an inability to adjust to poor results on the floor might have been Van Gundy's biggest failing as a coach. I think that he could have handled Stanley Johnson better. I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about that more in the future. I think that when he shut down Reggie Jackson at the end of the season and then moved Ish Smith into the starting lineup, I think that that was not necessarily a bad move there. But moving him into the starting lineup, leaving John Luehr in the starting lineup, and not replacing him with Tobias Harris was a dreadful move. It didn't take a whole lot of look into the numbers to show that when Ish Smith was on the floor without Tobias, the Pistons did not score. They simply did not score. I think the first three or four games after Ish began starting in the starting lineup with KCP, John Luehr, Marcus Morris, Andre Drummond, that lineup had an offensive rating per NBA Wowie of something like 57 points per 100 possessions. That's unfathomable for a multi-game stretch for an NBA starting lineup. But then if you look at the numbers when Tobias Harris is on the floor with Ish Smith, they were a completely different team. And they complemented each other well in ways that the rest of the lineup really didn't. So there are ways that things could have gone better, and some of that is on Van Gundy, but I think that it's hard to blame anybody for when they make decisions that don't work out when everything around them is just going wrong, you know. So I think that we're going to have to wait until this season, this coming season, to really give the full verdict on Van Gundy. If we recall, optimism reigned supreme for a lot of Pistons fandom, the organization, people around the team, and with good reason. And it's also important to remember that if this season came last season, it would have been a lot easier to swallow. I think the Pistons might have just made their jump a little earlier than expected, and then the floor fell out with Reggie getting hurt and never really getting his legs back under him. So, long-winded answer. I'm not sure that we have to look at digging out of a gigantic, monstrous, horrible hole. We've got this season to worry about, and I think that there are higher priorities right now other than simply trying to dig out of a hole. I think that there might be some things that can be salvaged out of this season. So, let's hold off on the verdict on Stan Van Gundy, long story short. Coke Diggler, is there a case that the best course is not freaking out and pushing talent out the door, or are we still the same damn Pistons fans? Yep, we're on the same page with that one. I have countless mentions on Twitter asking how we can trade Andre Drummond, insisting that re-signing KCP would be a mistake. If they're young, if they are not producing to the level that you think they should, if things aren't going the way we thought they would, let's just jettison the whole core. That's not how it's going to work, and that's not how it should work, especially with a team this young, especially with a team that is this young together. It's going to take some time. I think that much is very evident. And the Pistons are not as locked in as I think. The Pistons are not as locked in as a lot of fans think. This coming season is basically a tryout. And it'll be after, it'll be deep into this season, very possibly. If the Pistons are going to blow things up, it's going to be deep into the season when they actually do that. So, hold on to your horses, folks. Let's wait it out before we start trying to push young talent out the door. And with that, we're going to wrap this one up. As always, you can follow me at DuncanSmithNBA on Twitter. And if you'd like to support the podcast, the best way to do so is to rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, whatever your podcast source of choice might be. Make sure you give us a 5-star if you can. And you can also support the podcast by using SeatGeek. That's an app you can download to your phone. You can use the coupon code LOPISTONS. That'll get you $20 off your first purchase. So make sure you download the SeatGeek app. And it's the best way to get the best value for your entertainment dollar. Use the deal score feature, which lets you know if you're actually getting the best deal for a particular seat or a particular section. You really can't go wrong purchasing your tickets through SeatGeek. So again, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, add the coupon code LOPISTONS, and you will get $20 off your first purchase. And we'll see you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Napa Know-How.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.